B-Pod Studios.
Today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
Author Greg Runoff is first up today on the double dose of Talkin' Rock with Meltdown. His new book is called Ted Templeman, A Platinum Producer's Life in Music. Ted Templeman has worked with such greats as Aerosmith, Eric Clapton, and of course, Van Halen, the Doobie Brothers. What did he think the first time he heard Michael McDonald sing?
Like his jaw dropped, he said, when he heard this guy's voice, and what a career. And yeah, I mean, everything from, solo artist and then songwriter. I mean, and of course, he's become this legendary figure Mike has from Yacht Rock.
Of course, we got into a lot of talk about Van Halen.
Ted talking about how great Sammy was to work with him. He talked about how, for instance, that, Sammy was kind of like the guy in the locker room who'd keep everybody loose before the big game. I mean, they go in the studio and something would be working well, and Sammy's like, had nicknames for everybody.
Then I replay an Instagram Live interview I did with Lee from Pop Evil last week. Of course, they released two brand new songs. We talked about their thought process behind that.
There was talk about, do we wait because of this situation? But everyone, from band members to team, we were all like, heck no, we're not holding anything back.
Lee says he's got a pretty good vibe about this new material and upcoming album.
Personally, I mean, you can talk to the other band members, but I can talk for myself. I feel like it's our strongest yet.
It's author Greg Runoff and Lee Kiketti from Pop Evil today on Talkin' Rock.
This is Talkin' Rock. Talkin' Rock. Your backstage pass to some of your favorite rock artists. Here's your host, Meltdown.
A big thank you for checking out the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast. With each podcast, hopefully we get closer to normalcy. We'll see what happens, but trying to get you a little taste of normal, give you some content during these crazy times. As a matter of fact, I was right in the middle of doing this podcast, and I had the phone handed to me. I had Scott Stapp on the other end, of course, famous for Creed and doing his solo stuff now for an Instagram Live video on our Instagram for the radio station at WRIF. Great conversation with him. So good, as a matter of fact. I'm going to post that, I think, next time I put up a podcast. In the meantime, Lee from Pop Evil was great, as always, to talk with. We're going to get to him here in just a bit. But first, I want to get Greg Runoff his due, as he's got this new book out, like I was talking about before, featuring Ted Templeman, who was just a world-class producer and produced all sorts of stuff, but maybe best known for Van Halen. And Greg is like kind of a Van Halen guy. He actually wrote a book back in 2015. Called Van Halen Rising, How a Southern California Backyard Party Band Saved Heavy Metal. So, yeah, Van Halen's kind of like right in Greg Runoff's wheelhouse. But Greg's such a good guy, and I wanted to give him a little bit of push on this book, of course, in these weird times now. So if you're a Van Halen fan as well, you should check out his book. Oh, by the way, before we get started, Greg does hail from Oklahoma. So, I mean, that begs the question. Does he know the Tiger King?
He's a worldwide famous person. I only wish I knew him better than I did. But of course, yeah, he's like my neighbor. I go pet the tigers and throw the dead cows over the fence. And
sorry, man, I just had to ask. But Greg Upchurch from Three Doors Down lives down there in Oklahoma, and he told me that he's known about this guy for a long time.
Yeah, I think he's kind of had like a local reputation, but now he's achieved his worldwide fame finally thanks to Netflix. So, yeah.
Did you watch the series?
I haven't seen any of it, actually. I've seen the trailer, but I haven't seen the thing yet.
It's pretty wild, man. So, hey, so, dude, thanks so much for taking the time. How's things in your world with your new book release and all sorts of stuff? Tell me about what's going on. I know you're doing all sorts of podcasts, interviews, everything. So kind of a whirlwind for you, kind of hunkered down at home or what?
Yeah, it's been a hunkered down book release, which is not the plan, of course, was to go out to L.A., in the middle of April and spend a week or so out there. And we were going to, meaning Ted and I, Ted Templeman and I, were going to do a book signing and then had a couple other events that we were actually ready to announce before COVID shut everything down. So to plan B, which is, everything from home. Ted's done a little bit of press and I've done, everything I can to sort of help get the word out about his autobiography, which I'm thrilled to have worked with him on. And I'm very glad it's out.
Now, what kind of guy is Ted?
Ted's kind of an unassuming guy. I mean, I think if you kind of looked at his resume, you would assume a different type of personality than he has. I always try to describe it to people. He's much more like a teacher or a professor. He's very, very low key. If you talk to him, he's kind of an intellectual guy. It doesn't mean he doesn't have a sense of humor. Or doesn't somebody who's sort of understands the rock and roll side of the business. But he's And he's pretty low key, and he's definitely a thoughtful person when you ask him questions. And we talked obviously at length about a lot of topics related to the bands he worked with in his whole career, even before he got into production. You know, he really gives you thoughtful answers rather than sort of, you know, the sort of quick answers back on things. He, you know, kind of lays out his ideas. And so it was fun to work with him on the book because he had a lot of good memories and a lot of good content to sort of help flesh it out.
Now, I think last time I talked to you was right after David Lee Roth made some news here in the podcast where he said that Van Halen was finished. And as of today, they still are. But I think you mentioned to me that Ted, like his hearing isn't what it used to be. Is that right?
Well, I mean, I think it's just, you know, he's 77 years old, so his hearing is not fantastic. But I mean, I think anybody who's, you know, started off, he toured in the 60s with his band Harper's Bazaar, and then, of course, spent years and years sitting in front of studio monitors listening to playbacks at massive volume.
Yeah.
I think, like a lot of people of his age demographic, his hearing's not super, but, you know, you can have a conversation with him. He can hear you just, you know, it's like anybody else.
Yeah, people don't may or may not know this, but I've had my left ear rebuilt twice, and the last one was about 20 years ago. So I do end up watching TV at home with the closed captioning on. Plus, you can't believe how many things you miss when you don't have the closed captioning on. There's all sorts of stuff that I didn't hear the first time through that. Now all of a sudden it's like, you know, you see it on the screen and stuff. So that's kind of cool. But yeah, Ted, I mean, when you talk to him, does he strike you as the kind of person that has that ear for music? Do you ever, I mean, did you talk to him about, I mean, obviously songs he did in the past, but do you ever talk to him about anything current or anything like that?
Oh yeah. I mean, I think on occasion things will come up. I mean, we didn't spend a lot of time talking about, you know, pop hits, but of the day, but I mean, he definitely is somebody who, you know, has a tuned ear for, especially for, I think, a distinctive voice. I mean, that was one thing that I really learned from talking to him about how important it is when you're listening to vocalists to think about whether or not the person who is singing has a distinctive voice. And he used this great example, which I often say to people, you know, telling them that Ted told me this, was that, you know, if you go to Broadway and you can listen to 100 singers on, you know, 10 Broadway shows, and you could have them in a room and everyone would have a perfect voice and hit all the notes. He said, but are they distinctive? Are they going to stick out on the radio? He goes, that's the thing. It's not just about being able to hit all the notes and having a tremendous voice. Like, these people have tremendous voices, but you know, talk about the people who, you know, anyone from like a Linda Ronstadt to a Mick Jagger. I mean, you can sing like an angel, like Linda Ronstadt, or have sort of a, you know, maybe a less conventional voice like Mick Jagger, but it's a matter that you hear that person and it's recognizable. There's something about the voice that sort of sticks in your mind. And that was something that was really a big lesson for me to learn in thinking about how Ted thought as a producer. So he'll talk about, I don't remember any of a specific person he mentioned to, but you know, he might point to somebody and say, oh yeah, that person has that special, you know, that quality that you want as a producer, something that you think that if it gets on the radio, the person hears it, goes, oh, that's cool, that's different, I'm going to remember that voice.
Yeah, it kind of cuts through the clutter.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just a matter of, yeah, it's not just about talent, it's about something that is going to stand out among the dozens and dozens and dozens of songs or you would hear in a day on a radio or through a streaming program, through a, you know, algorithm feeding you songs. Is what's going to kind of pop into your mind and go, oh, that's different. I haven't heard anything like that before. Yeah. Or that's familiar. I know that voice because I've heard it before, and that one's different than these other singers who sing in the same genre.
Now, how long did you spend with Ted writing this book and talking to him about stories? And did you have to really like pull things out of him, or is he one of these guys where he just gave up a lot of really great info?
Yeah, I mean, I think we started working on it. You know, I pitched the idea of the book to him. I mean, I think that's the one thing I always try to tell people. It wasn't his idea. It was my idea totally. And I had to convince him to do the book. I mean, at first he was kind of like a book, you know, a book on me, like, you know, kind of like, you know, I didn't, you know, I wasn't a star or anything like that. And sort of, you know, I think kind of as the person who was, as he liked to call himself, the lighting man, the person who shined the spotlight on other people to make them look good, like a director in a film. He was thinking like, you know, you want to film, you know, you focus on the person who's on the film or on the record, or the star rather than him. But, you know, and once I got talking to him, that was in the beginning of 2016, you know, he was forthcoming, especially about things that I knew nothing about. I mean, you know, obviously there was parts of his career, whether it be the Doobie Brothers or Van Halen or Honeymoon Suite. I mean, if you go through all the sort of little feet, the sort of the conventional things you would think of when you think of Ted Templeman in terms of his resume. But you know, what's interesting about Ted is that he had a whole career, as I mentioned earlier, as a pop star. So he was in a band called Harper's Bazaar, which was a soft pop band in the late 60s. So Ted was on television, I mean, primetime TV, He was someone who played in stadiums, shared a stage with Raquel Welch and Bob Hope, played on stage with Louis Armstrong. And so he had all these incredible stories about other things. And in fact, I think that was part of what we really started with, some of that stuff I didn't really know anything about. I mean, obviously we talked about all, we got into everything in detail, but I was really interested about his, you know, less known parts of his career. And he told me, for example, too, that he got to see and watch Sinatra record almost by in the late 60s and 66, just by kind of by accident. He was a kind of a studio geek. He was kind of hanging around recording studios right when he got a deal with Warner Brothers. He just enjoyed the studio environment and was kind of hanging around watching the engineers and watching the producers work in the studio. And Sinatra came in the studio in LA in Hollywood, and he got a chance to kind of sit in the back of the room, so to speak, and watch, and was just blown away by seeing a singer like that perform with an orchestra in the big room there in the studio in LA. So those types of stories were actually where we kind of started with that stuff that I think a lot of people wouldn't have known about until we did this book. So, and then he kind of moved on to other things, but you know, he was, you know, like I said, he's a thoughtful person, and you know, he was able to expound at length about his experiences working on different records. And of course, the other thing I'd say is, of course, like anything else, as we went along, I tried to jar his memory about things where I was doing my work as, you know, going through old Billboard articles or old newspaper articles or clippings or photographs and kind of sending it to him. And he might say, oh, I totally forgot about that. And then we would talk about, you know, whatever it was. Like, you know, he would, for example, one of the things he did, since he was a musician himself, he played with the Doobie Brothers on stage a number of times. Usually, really? Like once a tour, he would pop on stage and play congas. Yeah, he was a drummer. And so he'd play congas or play drums sometimes even. And so I might find a newspaper review from Detroit or something and say, Ted, a sentence or two, producer Ted Templeman joined the Doobie Brothers on stage for their encore because Ted was there doing something. And, you know, he would, oh, I forgot about that. And he would talk about, you know, something more about doing that stuff with the Doobies. And so that was all, you know, part of the process of getting emails from him. And then I sat with him at length a number of times over the course of those years. I'd go out to LA, spend days with him, just, you know, running the recorder, talking, asking him questions. And yeah, it was a very collaborative process. And then he would see drafts and say, oh, you know, I think you misunderstood me, or oh, that's dead on right. And we would just sort of tweak things and go on along the way over the course of those, you know, 4 years the book was in process.
Now, your book, Van Halen Rising, came out in 2015. So, and that's what people may know you about. I mean, at the end of the day, that's your band, right, Van Halen?
Yeah, I mean, I think that was the band that I loved probably most as a kid. I mean, they always were, you know, and even if I went through different musical periods where, you know, I was maybe like by the late 80s, I was listening to more Metallica in the car than Van Halen. I always was listening to Van Halen.
Yeah.
You know, and so it was just one of these things that was a constant throughout my life. And I was one of these, like millions of kids across the globe, was a guy who wanted to be able to play electric guitar well in the 80s, and I was not particularly very good. You know, I always say I was like the, you know, the best intermediate beginner player ever. And you know, so that was part of the obsession with Van Halen too, was of course the guitar playing with Eddie. It's like, you know, being a basketball fan and, you know, being obsessed with Michael Jordan or something. That just makes perfect sense. You think, oh yeah, I want to be like this guy. I never even got close, but that was part of what the driving force for me too, was just as a, you know, a guy who was, you know, enjoyed playing guitar, was just the love of Eddie's playing.
Now, you know, I don't know if you'll appreciate this analogy, but it's like I wanted to play guitar, but then I realized I talked myself out of it in about 5 seconds because I'm like, I will never be able to manhandle a guitar like Ted Nugent. And then I thought to myself, wait a minute, I've been playing hockey for 40 years and I can't stick handle like, you know, Pavel Datsyuk.
Right.
So it's like, why do I still play hockey? But did Ted know about your Van Halen book? I mean, before this all started?
Yeah. So actually that's how we actually first got in contact. I reached out to him and mentioned that I was doing this book about Van Halen's early days, and the book culminates with the making of their first record. And I asked if I could talk to him, and he said, sure. And, you know, I think he was really just excited to talk about those first years with the band. I think, you know, it's funny in doing the book with him, it's one thing that's really interesting, and I wonder if it's for, like this for a lot of people, whether they're producers or musicians, it's like the first album, the memories are so distinct because I think it's so exciting and so new. Mm. So he was so, you know, just was so blown away by the first time he saw Eddie Van Halen. And then of course how great the band was. And he would tell me things, for example, right before Van Halen went on the road in 1978 to tour with Journey and later with Black Sabbath, he saw them in Pasadena and they played in front of 3,000 people in Pasadena. And this is before they had a record out. So this is the fall of 77. And Ted told me about how everyone in the crowd was going, hey, chanting along with talking about love. And the song hadn't been on a record yet. You know, it was just, you know, they played it for people in and around Pasadena, but he was like, oh my gosh, this band is incredible. These, you know, these kids are like, already are like so into the band, they don't have a record out. And he said that was, he walked out of there going, man, these guys are going to be huge. If things break right for them, they're going to be huge, huge band. And, you know, he told me a lot about those types of stories and writing Van Halen Rising. And then when the book came out, he liked the book. I got back in touch with him and he ended up doing a book signing with me in Pasadena, which was amazing. I got to sit with him. And that was the first time we had met face to face, incidentally. And, you know, soon after that, in the aftermath of that, we exchanged some emails. And eventually I pitched the idea of doing a Ted Templeman book to him.
Now, do the, real fast, let me just say that, you know, it's funny you mentioned that about how, like, playing in front of the 3,000 people, because back in the day in the 70s and 80s and stuff, that's what used to happen, like with Twisted Sister and different bands like that. They'd play to these packed houses all over the place. That's how they kind of got noticed. Nowadays, it's kind of weird. It's like, Greta Van Fleet, for some reason, like, you know, just as an example, it's off the top of my head. They're from Michigan here. They never played to 30 people. The only time I ever saw them play live before I played them on the radio was at some sort of an Arch Beats and Eats out here for like nobody. And then they put their record out and it exploded. You know what I'm saying? It's kind of one of those things.
Yeah. I mean, I think the Twisted Sister analogy is the perfect one, actually. If you see the Twisted Sister documentary, you've seen it, I'm sure. A lot of people have it. Like, you know, Twisted Sister was kind of like the East Coast parallel for Van Halen, but they played nightclubs, they played covers, and eventually they started eventually renting out theaters and playing in New York. And they played, I think, the Beacon Theater in New York for like 2,000 people, and they didn't have a record deal. And it was, you know, kind of a similar type of story. But you know, that was the other thing that was, to me, was the really compelling part about Van Halen. And you know, you could say the same thing about Twisted Sister, about how hard those guys worked. When I dug into their beginnings and really looked at their you know, getting started with Roth in 73. I mean, that's 5 years before they broke through. And those guys were playing 5 nights a week at biker bars and, you know, beer parties and, you know, nightclubs and just everywhere, backyard parties, as everybody knows. I mean, everywhere they could play weddings. I mean, it's just insane. They played everywhere. That's part of the reason why that band was so good, of course, when they came out of the box in 78 and shocked everybody how great they were. Because, they've been playing everywhere. But, yeah, it is sort of a different thing because there isn't really an infrastructure. Even in LA, there's not an infrastructure to play nightclubs. The thing I really learned about the LA club scene in the 70s was that, you know, there were enough nightclubs across the city of Los Angeles where you could play 6 nights a week. You know, Van Halen had their own circuit, but there were all sorts of, like, there was a disco circuit. There were all these places to go out. I mean, people just don't go out like that anymore to hear music. And so there was just a complete network of places where you could just travel from Seal Beach to Pomona, to San Bernardino, to Pasadena, to Hollywood, and play clubs, along with parties like Van Halen did.
Yeah, you know, I'm just thinking about this back to the days. Like, so I grew up in Buffalo, and you've heard of Talis, right?
Of course.
Yeah, so yeah. Talis was, like, for those that don't know, that was Billy Sheehan's first band. And I recorded my demo tapes to get on the radio with the lead singer of Talis in 1988 or something like that. I'd never met him before, and we've been friends ever since. You know, Billy told me one time on my podcast that Van Halen offered him a tryout or an invitation to play with the band, and he turned it down because he didn't want to break up his favorite band. You've probably heard that before, right?
I have heard that before. And, you know, the funny thing is that stuff, I may have mentioned that to Ted, I think I did just in passing. He didn't know anything about that. I mean, I think that was sort of like inside the band politics or whatever. It didn't ever reach his level of stuff. And, you know, Ted talking about that period of time, 81, 82, 80, whenever that was, and Billy got that offer. Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that sort of in retrospect, you could sort of see the fault lines there when something like that was going on. You know, they always, to me, Van Halen always looked like kind of like a gang on stage or something, like these, you know, these gang of guys all committed to the same thing. And then you know, obviously, like a lot of bands, you sort of realized there were some cracks under the surface there that people couldn't really see.
Yeah, well, for those that don't know, so Billy Sheehan played with Talis, which toured with Van Halen around 1980 or so. That's where the connection was made. Yep. And then, of course, you know, Dave leaves the band and goes and forms a solo band. And who's in his band? Billy Sheehan, you know, so it's not out of the realm of possibility for sure.
No, yeah. I mean, I think Billy has been clear that he, you know, had conversations with Ed about it and Alex, and it never really went anywhere. But, you know, I mean, I no doubt that it was legitimate conversation, of course. Yeah. And that's the best evidence of how well respected Billy was by those guys, is that as soon as Dave needed a bass player, he called Billy.
Now, I've always wanted to ask you this. I don't know if I asked you this last time or not. I can't recall. Do you know if any of the Van Halen guys read your Van Halen Rising book, and have any of them made any comments about this this new book with Ted Templeman?
Well, I know one has made a comment, as far as I know, about the Van Halen Rising book publicly. The only thing I know that is that Mike Anthony signed a copy of the book for somebody. The person told me, sent me an email after it happened, and Mike was like, "Oh yeah, I've read, you know, kind of like I checked this book out. It's a good book." And I had interviewed Mike for the Van Halen Rising book. I never heard anything else from the other guys. And then recently, Sammy and Mike Anthony were on Trunk, and Eddie Trunk brought up the Ted Templeman book, and Mike Anthony was nice enough to say, "Oh yeah, that's Greg Renoff. He wrote Van Halen Rising." So I feel good that he knows my name, and at least, you know, seemed to be you know, have enjoyed it from that standpoint, that he knew the name of the book and knew my name and stuff. So no, I've never gotten any sort of, like, you know, legitimate feedback from any of those guys. I would, you know, it would be cool. I mean, it would be cool one way or the other just to hear something, but no, I've never heard a thing.
Yeah, I've interviewed Sammy a lot more times than anybody else in Van Halen, and I have met Michael Anthony before, and he's super nice like that, so that doesn't surprise me at all that he would say something like that. And then he mentioned earlier the Doobie Brothers. You know, I did an interview with Michael McDonald near the end of the year last year. About 10 years ago, I was out in Los Angeles, and we were doing these interview junkets with different things and stuff, and somebody said something I never forgot. They said, interview some of these bands that you might not normally interview, or some of these celebrities or whatever, because you never know what's going to happen. And sometimes I do that, and it's like Michael McDonald's a little bit out of my wheelhouse. It was one of the most memorable interviews I had last year. The guy was so nice. He, you know, it's almost like he couldn't wait to talk about his little small part in 40-Year-Old Virgin and stuff. He was fantastic. He was great.
Who's in that movie? That's amazing.
Dude, he was like a kid. He couldn't believe I even brought it up. He was so great to talk to. Really nice.
Yeah, he's one of the guys who play a real central role in Ted's biography. And, you know, Ted has nothing but such massive respect for, really, I mean, all the artists he worked with. But Mike, to kind of come out of nowhere, Mike was a fill-in guy and filled in on a tour for the Doobie Brothers when Tom Johnson got sick in 75. And then, you know, for Ted to discover that Michael McDonald was a vocalist of that caliber, then could write songs, came to the three songs that Ted ever heard Mike McDonald play for him, you know. And he was just kind of like blown away. And this, the way he tells the story in the book, was that he heard this guy was on the rope, the Doobie Brothers. Obviously, Ted was in L.A. doing albums and being a Warner Brothers executive, and the Doobies were on the road with Mike McDonald, who was a fill-in guy. And, you know, he's like, "Oh, whatever, okay, I'll meet the fill-in guy when he gets home." And the guys in the band were like, "You might want to meet this guy, it gets pretty good." And they're like, "Well, you know, whatever, I'll, you know, whatever." And then, like, was just like his jaw dropped, he said, when he heard this guy's voice. And what a career. And yeah, I mean, everything from you know, solo artist and then songwriter, I mean, you know. And of course, he's become this legendary figure, Mike has, from Yacht Rock and all this other stuff that sort of, you know, makes him like a pop culture, like, you know, he's like a pop cult, like the 40-Year Virgin. I mean, all that stuff kind of makes him like bigger than the music industry, you know, which is really cool too. Yeah, I'd love to meet him. Heard he's a great guy.
Dude, he was fantastic. I brought up the old skits from Saturday Night Live with him, and he couldn't wait to talk about it. But, you know, I just recently wrote about in my blog the other day. So I've been doing this blog every day for like the last, I don't know, 50 days or something. And I got a lot of rock stories just from my, you know, life and different things. And one of my favorite Van Halen stories revolves around Shinedown. Did you hear about this story with Shinedown and Van Halen in the early 2000s?
I don't think I know this story, so tell me. But I know there's a story there. Tell it to me.
All right. So anyways, the guys from Shinedown are invited to go on this Van Halen tour. And I think that Eddie at the time was still like boozing it pretty hard and stuff. And the guys told me, they've all told me this story. There was all the guys were in their locker room, but Brent Smith, the singer, was in the bathroom. And after he got done, he went to wash his hands, and there was no paper towels or whatever. So he walked out, and Eddie Van Halen's there meeting the band. And and so he shakes Brent Smith's hand, and he goes, "What'd you do, piss all over your hand?" He goes, "Yeah, Eddie, I pissed all over my hand before I met you. That's exactly what I did." He was like being, you know, just, you know, sarcastic. So Eddie Van Halen apparently had a cigarette in his mouth. He took his cigarette, rolled it up in a piece of turkey on their deli tray, proceeded to piss on it to put it out, and said, "That's called a smoking gun. Tell your tour manager." Did you ever hear that story?
Welcome to the biz, boys.
That's it. That's pretty much it. Yeah. And every guy, I posted that the other day, and Jason, the original guitar player, and Brad, the bass player, is now in Saliva, retweeted it and said, "That's exactly what happened." So I didn't know if you'd ever heard that story.
I've not heard that story.
I think that's from the days when Sammy said, hey, Ed, why don't you put that wine in a glass when he was drinking out of the bottle? And he says, this is a glass, right?
There you go.
So, I mean, was there some Van Halen stories that Ted may have told you that you had not heard or that, you know, kind of took you by surprise?
Yeah, I mean, I think there were tons of stories. I mean, I think for me, the biggest revelation, honestly, in terms of just talking to Ted about Van Halen was when I first started talking to him about it. You know, he was like, I never wanted the band to break up. And I never thought he would have wanted to break up, meaning Dave to leave. But he was so adamant and so impassioned about the fact that he did everything he could to keep those guys from splitting up. And that, you know, he didn't want anyone else in Van Halen but Dave. And it was no offense to Sammy, who he loves personally and thinks is an amazing singer.
And let's back up for one second, because at first he wasn't crazy about Dave, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. Within like, you know, in 1977, as the book lays out, within a matter of, you know, weeks or a month or so after he first signs the band, Ted kind of does a 180 from having doubts about Dave as a vocalist to seeing, like, you know what, this guy does so many things well, and there's enough clay here I can mold in the studio to make it work. And, you know, he does a complete 180, and then he, you know, thinks that Roth is absolutely essential. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he kind of gets it. He kind of gets Dave, you know, more than just the voice. Like, at first it was just, he was just worried about the voice. You know, 'cause he's not a conventional voice, as we know, but he, you know, he did the complete turnaround. And then by 1985, you know, he just couldn't stomach anyone else being in the band other than, Dave, and was just, you know, kind of heartbroken by the whole thing, that it ended up the way it did. And it would cause a lot of, personal grief for Ted, just because he was kind of caught in the middle between, you know, wanting the original Van Halen stay together. You have Sammy, who he just did VOA with just a year earlier, and it was a gold record, and I think then a platinum record with I Can't Drive 55. So it was a big hit for Sammy, and got enormous respect for Sammy. And so then to turn around and be like, I don't want Sammy in the band, you know, not that it was Ted, it wasn't up to Ted ultimately, but him sort of to say, like, I don't want another vocalist. I want, you know, I want Dave. I offended the brothers to some extent too. Obviously they were, you know, it was their band in their mind. And so it was, you know, it was a difficult situation for Ted, but I never thought about it that way, because I had always believed, I think like a lot of people, that it was sort of, you know, Ted was like, well, who cares? I got to do the Roth solo album, the EP, where he was more, you know, was just kind of, you know, crestfallen that those guys couldn't work out their differences and that they split, you know?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's, you know, I was a kid getting into rock and roll when it all started and stuff. And I gotta be honest, man, 5150 and those records, I really like, but you know, it is the eternal question. It's like Sammy or Dave, and man, each guy brings something different to the table, and I really like both of it. But I guess if I had to choose, it'd probably be Dave, just because it's crunchier and heavier. But I mean, I love the Sammy stuff, and Sammy, I've had a chance to interview and meet a bunch of times, and I mean, you know, you can't find a better guy in this business. He's such a great guy.
No, I mean, I think that's the other thing too, is that, you know, that was one of the really fun parts of the book, was actually Ted talking about how great Sammy was to work with. I mean, he talked about how, for instance, that, you know, Sammy was kind of like the guy in the locker room who'd keep everybody loose before the big game. I mean, they go in the studio and something wouldn't be working well, and Sammy's like, had nicknames for everybody, and was just like, you know, he would call, you know, one thing that Ted told me, I'm not sure he made the book, that he talked about how, you know, there was a guy who was kind of grumpy who worked at the studio, one of the security guys who was always kind of crabby, and he'd go, you know, what's with old Broke Dick today or whatever, like, and, you know, just like these stuff that like that Sammy kept things loose. The other time, this story did make the book, that Ted said they just, another sort of, you know, stressful day, and Sammy out of the blue was like, let's get some barbecue. And Ted was like, what? He's like, we're not going out to dinner. We're going to get barbecue and order all this barbecue. This is in Fantasy Studios out in San Francisco or Berkeley, excuse me. And they ordered this like big platter of like barbecue, and said, like, Ted's like, we all got like barbecue sauce in our face, and Sammy's slapping me on the back. Going, I hit those ribs, Ted. You know, he was just kind of this like, yeah, he said it was just like so fun. He loved Sammy so much. I mean, just a great singer, obviously. And but said he was, you know, kind of this guy. You could crash your car on the way to the studio. Sammy could crash his Ferrari and would just, you know, be able to shake it off and be like, I'm going to get another Ferrari, no worries. And just had this positive mindset that he said was just infectious. And he loved Sammy.
Now, when Dave, and by the way, Sammy, just to wrap this up, but Sammy is exactly like that. Like, I have to believe, I've only been around him a handful of times and stuff, but he's like the guy that's made all the money in the business. He doesn't have a care in the world. He just wants to have fun and everyone around him to have fun. But that's just how he seems. Was there anybody that Ted wanted to take the place of Dave?
No, I mean, that was the thing, that for him, it was nothing. I mean, think, But Dave, the analogy I use, which I think is the right one for making people understand, is like, you know, think about what happened in the middle 80s with the Stones, where Jagger and Richards were sniping each other and the Stones were kind of looking like they were going to break up. But at one point, there were these leaked stories, presumably from Richards, that they were going to get Roger Daltrey to sing for the Stones. Mm. And of course, you think about it, you're like, well, Daltrey's, I mean, he's in The Who. He's like a great singer. He's, you know, he could write songs. He'd be great. Who wouldn't want to be in a band with Roger Daltrey? But, you know, it's not the Stones. Without Jagger, it's not the Stones. And that's kind of was Ted's mindset on it. It's just not Van Halen without Dave. It, you know, again, it was no offense to Sammy, and he respected the brother's opinion, but I think he was just like, it's just, I can't, you know, he couldn't accept it. Like, you know, it'd be like Led Zeppelin without Robert Plant. You know, it's just not going to work for him. It just didn't work for him, and he just didn't want it. So he was, you know, kind of pushing as hard as he could to be like, come on, you know, sit down, talk. You know, this is crazy. You guys are fighting, and just this is insane that you guys are going to actually split this band up. When Ted thought it was, like, obviously the greatest, at the point in time, the greatest rock and roll band in the world, he's like, this is madness that you guys are not going to be able to just get over whatever BS, you know, issues. You know, all bands fight. Like Ted said, they, you know, every band fights. They all do, to one extent to another, but just make it, you know, make it through this crisis and get to the next thing and just move through it. But it just never happened. So it caused a lot of personal distress for Ted, because he just, you know, he kind of felt like he was wronging Sammy. He was wronging the brothers. And that wasn't his intention, you know, to kind of, he was just trying to say what he felt artistically, which was that Van Halen is those four guys that I signed, no one else.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that, because like Van Halen was, what, 7 years into their career or so when they decided to break up. And they were, I mean, right, you know, 1984 was a monster record for them. They had some big records coming out. And I mean, you know, it'd be like, I don't know, like Gary Cherone joining Van Halen.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and again, I think the counter argument to that is, of course, like, you know, again, you know, I talked to Ted about this, and it's just, you know, like you can put Ronnie Dio in Black Sabbath and you keep the name and all that stuff. But to him, it was just, that was just his point of view on it. Yeah, I mean, like there's all sorts of ways you can think about it. Like, yeah, Gary Cherone, still Van Halen, to the brothers, you know, it's and to you know, fans, it's Van Halen. They, you know, it was just his own view on it. So that was there's a lot of discussion of that in the book, and he you know, kind of I think would surprise people with that point of view, where it surprised me quite a bit, because I didn't know that. I think that, again, the popular opinion was that Ted didn't care one way or the other, because whatever, he got to produce Dave.
Yeah. So if you had the chance, would you be up to writing a book about, you know, Eddie or Dave or Sammy or whatnot?
I mean, I'm open-minded about anything. I mean, I think Sammy's already done his book. Maybe he wants to do volume, you know, post-read volume 2. I mean, he keeps going. I mean, like,
yeah, Dave did one back in the 90s, which was pretty interesting. Yeah.
Of course, the lockdown stuff that he has been doing, Sammy's been doing, has been really fun to watch. But I enjoyed the process with Ted. It was definitely different when you're dealing with a living person you're trying to do a biography of. It's very different than trying to write a, you know, story about a band rather than, you know, one person who's actually the subject of the book. But yeah, I mean, I'd be open to hearing any and all ideas from anybody who's, you know, would be interested in working on a biography. But yeah, I mean, Sammy, I mean, honestly, like the brothers and Mike are the only ones who haven't done the book. So those are the guys who were remaining on the table. But of course, you know, that would be something that would be, I think, well out of the realm of possibility ever happening. But I would be, you know, it would be, of course, if anyone asked like that, I would be flattered. No matter who it was, I'd be flattered like that, of that level of success.
Now, do you have anything in the pipeline as far as another book is concerned? Or are you just kind of just doing this one right now and then maybe let the chips fall where they may coming up?
No, I mean, I think I really would like to do another Van Halen book, probably something more on the 80s. You know, the Van Halen Rising book culminated in 79. So right. I'd like to do something on the period where I was a, you know, kind of coming on board as a fan in the 80s. But, you know, with the way the world is right now, it's like homeschooling kids and trying to figure out how to get groceries out of the grocery store without dying. It's a little bit of a, you know, it's a little bit distracting right now. But, you know, I'm sure I have another book or two in me, of course.
So wrapping things up here with you. So the book is out right now. Ted Templeman, a platinum producer's life and music. I ask this of bands sometimes, so I'll ask you. So what do you think people will take away from this book?
You know, I think there's the music industry stories that Ted offers up, you know, his own career rise from a tape listener at Warner Brothers up to the very top of the corporation as an executive vice president. But, you know, beyond that, I think anyone who has an interest in how art is made, I mean, in the collaborative process, whether it be, you know, making a movie or working on a play or, again, working as a band and with a producer, would be interested in that, because I think that's a lot of what Ted talks about in the book, is the kind of the push and pull of the creative process, where, you know, look, like the song Jump, Ted wasn't super enthused about the song Jump. They worked on it, came together. Of course, it becomes a number one hit. And so there's lots of stories like that where you can sort of see the, you know, where maybe another member of the band didn't think a song was any good. And Ted's like, no, we should work on this. We need to work on this. What a Fool Believes, another example where a lot of the guys in Doobie Brothers had kind of lost confidence in that song. And Ted just kept trying to push it along to get it done. And that goes to number one. So I think that the idea of, you know, what it takes to get a collaborative piece of art out in the world, I think people would enjoy that part of the book.
Well, I'll tell you what, Greg, thanks so much for your time, man. It's always great to talk Van Halen and other things with you. I remember when we hooked up for the first time last year with Dave, and you're so well-spoken, and it's fun to talk, and I could talk to you for another 3 hours about Van Halen and related stuff, because I think we're kind of cut from the same cloth, so to speak. But I know you got stuff going on, and I do as well, but good luck in the book. Hey, by the way, how's this lockdown stuff? Has it helped or hindered you as far as sales and stuff?
You know, I think a lot of authors are probably going through the same thing. And again, I want to be clear that obviously a lot of people have a lot worse issues to deal with,
right,
with COVID stuff than I do. You know, paperback books are taking a lot longer to be delivered because Amazon is prioritizing delivering toilet paper and food to people. So that's been kind of one downside of it. But, you know, obviously the book is available and people have a lot more time. A lot of people are just kind of stuck in their house. So you can get Audible, listen to the book, or get the Kindle book on Amazon. And Barnes & Noble has paper copies and they're shipping them pretty quick. But Amazon is definitely kind of dragging their feet with delivery. So it's been kind of a double-edged sword there. So, it's been a different process than I expected. Like I said, I expected to do some live events, and those are all shuttered down for now.
Well, we'll try to point people, especially here in the Motor City, towards your book. And thanks so much for the time, and good luck.
I appreciate it. Thanks.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Up next from the great state of Michigan, it's Lee Kakati from Pop Evil. Of course, the guys have been friends here with the Riff radio station for a really long time. Matt Dorito is a good friend of mine, the bass player. I've known Lee for several years. Haley, by the way, just had her birthday. So happy birthday to Haley. As we record this, she had it yesterday. So in the meantime, this was an interview I did last week on our Instagram Live. Like I told you guys in the beginning, follow our Instagram at WRIF, or at mine at WRIF Meltdown, because we do these Instagram Live interviews, which are really cool. And this was one of them. And I thought, you know what? This is so good. I got to play this back on my Talk and Rock podcast. So we connected with Lee and we were off and running. It's Lee Kakati from Pop
Any
Evil.
Second now, we should see Lee. He should
melt down.
There he is. It's like magic.
Man,
where are you?
I'm so horrible at these live feeds. Not good at it.
Yeah. Where are you at, man?
I'm back in Michigan. I came back. I mean, I didn't want to get stuck.
Uh-oh. Are you there? There you go.
Cornea, so I ended up coming back out here to be with closer to friends and family, you know, so.
I got you. Okay, so yeah, so now I can see in the background. And there for a second, it looked like you were outside and it was darker out or something, but you're in a
No, room. Man, I got the whole rig.
Nice. I wore this shirt specially for you. Since
That's my shirt, right? I love it.
This is one from last year. You got the one from the year before.
Right on. Right on.
Before we got on, I was telling people how every time I'd see you, you always say, dude, I got to give me one of them shirts because it's got our name on it and stuff like that. So,
well, I always miss by the time you play I have a crazy shirt collection, you know, from every concert pretty much or every festival we've ever played, you know, since I've been little. So I think it started off, I was going to make one of those blankets, but there's too many shirts. I can't make one of those blankets. I don't got room for any of that stuff now. But I always try to get a shirt after every festival, but at the end of every festival, they're always sold out. So you never get lucky unless we go out and try to mooch one. But I always want the Detroit Riff Fest shirt. That's like any Michigan festival, I gotta have it. You know how it is.
No doubt. Yeah. Hey, speaking of shirts, I think Shelby messaged me. Are you selling shirts to help out the crew?
We are.
Yeah.
We are.
How's that work?
You know, we had an awesome you know, obviously we love our crew and obviously people I'm sure that are following the music business know just how how desperate need that crews are in at the moment, you know, and we absolutely love our crew, and our crew is so vital. Obviously Shelby and Mike and the rest of them, they've been so vital to our success, and they're so important to us. We wanted to do a little something to show them that, hey, every little bit helps, and let them know, number one, that, you know, they're appreciated. And I think sometimes, you know, they can feel forgotten, and especially when a new album's coming out, new songs, it's kind of like, oh, what about us? And we want them to know that they're first and foremost, most important to us. So it's been awesome. And the fans have been great buying up those shirts for them. So hopefully it'll be a nice little bit extra money for them to help. And we'll go from there. So they're very grateful, and we're excited about it.
And you can go on the website or something to get those?
Correct. Yeah, you can go to poppeople.com, and there's the merch stores all up there, and then they have all the links. And the shipping's real good. They had to send me some because normally I have them on tour, but since there's no tour, they had to ship, and the shipping was very fast. So I typed all the teammates and members to let them know that the shipping game is on point. So if you order the Pop People stuff, it comes very quick. So I was glad to see that.
No, that's great that you guys are doing that, because people tend to forget, yeah. You know, I mean, they see you five on stage, but there's bunch of people
right.
behind the scenes that makes this whole thing
right
happen. So, and it's good that you're taking care of them like that. So cool.
Yeah, for sure, man. We love them, and they've been so grateful, and they're very positive during this tough time, you know, so they can't wait. And every time I talk to them, they're like, man, every time I would get stressed, they'll be like, no, calm down. It's all good. We'll be ready to go. So they're so supportive and such positive people that hopefully this will be a nice little bit of extra income for them. And the fans, man, they raise us up, and they certainly love our crew members. So it's awesome to see.
That's cool. So tell me how excited you are today with the two new songs, Let Chaos Reign. I just texted Matt a few minutes ago. I'm like, that's just a smoke show. And then,
I'll be honest, man, I forgot about it, man. I just woke up. I forgot it was release day.
Yeah,
but I've been hearing
right.
these songs for weeks and months, you know, but no, I'm just kidding. It's a big deal. But no, man, we're excited, you know, and there was talk about, you know, do we wait because of this situation? But everyone, you know, from band members to team, we were all like, heck no, we're not holding anything back. We're going to release these songs. And now more than ever with you know, what's going on in the world, we think it's so important to have, you know, good news and positivity and something to be motivated. And that's the Pop People motto, man. It's just about motivation and giving people something to look forward to. And these songs, this record, I'm just going to just come out and say it. This record is easily destroys anything we've ever done. We're just, every album we get more in tune with what's going on with ourselves. And we, most importantly, we get in tune with what the fans want. Obviously, we're going to give them things that they want. We take it constructive, but also we're always going to give them that duality of that yin and yang that is Pop People. And we're going to do stuff that's a little bit experimental and stuff that they're not expecting. I mean, and we certainly did that here. We give you the extreme Pop and Evil, and we give you one of the craziest far left songs that we've ever done, and we give you the heaviest song to date. So just when you think, you know, you got us figured out, we try to do something a little bit different, and we're stoked. I mean, I'm excited. I'm out there trying to get the rest of this album done and sonically get it hitting hard, and every song to be at least as loud and heavy. So when you play that in your car, it's going to break your speakers, you know? So that's definitely number one on my radar. Or when they're listening to it on the riff, they're going to have to turn it down because it hits them so hard, you know? So it's, we like to think we know a little bit more about at least who we are. And when you come see us live, it's all about that live show. And we want it to be more entertaining. I mean, shoot, that last time we did the Riff Fest, I mean, that looked like there was a million people out there. So
yeah,
I mean, we got to come hard, be ready to go. So it was awesome.
So, yeah, you talk about the yin and yang, because that song Work, like you said, that's probably the farthest left. I got it here on my notes. You know, it's just a different feel once again. And you guys, I've told you this before, there's a lot of Pop Evil songs that just don't sound like Pop Evil songs. They're like kind of all different. You know, some bands, it's like you hear the songs and it sounds like one of their songs.
Right, right. I mean, I think that's the biggest defense that I always take whenever we get a fan comment that's like, oh, that's Pop Evil. I'm like, really? Then we're doing it wrong. Because, you know, I mean, now today, there is no Best Buy shelf with your CD on the rack in the rock section. There is no section, you know, and I think now more than ever, you have to be open to building a fan base in different ways. You know, there's no TV or any, even if there was TV, I mean, who's watching the same way that they used to be? So you have to be creative in ways to bring new audience members and people that might not know they like rock and roll. And I think that's the biggest mission for me. And I think the band members is to how many times we see people that might not be their favorite genre might not be rock or metal, but every time they see the band or they see bands like us, they're like, oh my gosh, I don't really listen to that kind of music, but I love you guys. I'm like, well, what does that mean? That means you like this kind of music. And so it's always been a big mission for me personally. And I know our band to just always remind people that if one song, let's say Work, gets them here, and then they hear songs like Let the Chaos Reign and Wake Thinking Lies, Footsteps, they hear the whole catalog, they're like, oh my gosh, and they see our amazing fan base, and they're like, wow, these people are amazing, that they'll stay. And, you know, and we can create more opportunities, not only for us and Pop Evil, but for this rock and metal community to come together by getting more of that mainstream audience to remind them that, you know, rock and roll is very much alive and well, and they need to do that and come to these shows that and they can see the true unity that is the live following of these live rock and roll fans. You know, they're there for a career, right? They're not just there on the pop side. They're here because that song was their favorite this time and they're gone or they grew up. Rock fans are there from birth. They come with mom and dad when they're young and they stay up until they're adults and then they bring their kids. So it's so important to me that it's a lifestyle. And if you can create more opportunities for you musically to bring more of an audience, you know, hopefully you can expand that following into different people and from many different walks of life. And they come and they see it and they're like, hey, I'm a rock fan now. And that's, we just try to control our own destiny. And I can talk your ear off for hours, but you know, that's where I'm at.
So tell me about the record. I mean, do you have a title? Do you have a date when you're going to be released? Or are you just dropping these?
Yeah, I have all that, but I ain't telling you any of it.
Okay.
No, I'm just kidding. No, I don't know. You know, we're just taking our time. You know, I mean, I think the cool thing is we're trying to stay up on what's going on in the news and on the TVs and trying to, number one, keep our fans and keep everyone safe. I mean, everyone's doing that. It's the right thing to do. You know, we were the first things to get canceled. We're probably going to be the last things to come back. But, we're okay. You know, we're in it for the long haul. You know, we got a lot of great music, like I said. I mean, I feel personally, I mean, you can talk to the other band members, but I can talk for myself. I feel like it's our strongest yet, you know, and I'm excited about it. But, you know, again, we don't want to rush it. We have to make sure that it's dialed in right. And we got kind of postponed when LA shut down and all the studios and all my warehouse, everything's over there on the West Coast. So, you know, we'll see if I can somehow sneak over there and get things done sooner than later. But like I said, man, that's why we gave you two songs. Hopefully that's more than enough time. When you get tired of one, go listen to the other, you know? And if not, we have five other albums you can explore all till the cows come home. And even not, there's tons of great other bands coming out with new music. So again, we're very content with who we are. We're trying to run the Pop Evil race. We're not trying to be worried about anyone else, and we'll take it from there.
In case you're just joining us, we got Lee from Pop Evil here on the Instagram
yes.
Live, which is really cool because it's like, I was talking about this with someone earlier. It's like, I can't believe we've never really done this before. Now
yeah, it's pretty cool, right?
Yeah.
I didn't know. I mean, it took me. I mean, he said 3 o'clock, we'll do this. I knew when I saw that, it'd be more like 3:15 because I'm horrible with all the Insta Live stuff. But I think it's great, you know, and obviously I kept calling managers. I'm like, how am I going to see Meltdown? Like, how's it work? I don't even, like, what am I going to just talk live? I'll only see the questions, you know. But it's been great. You know, I'm excited and you know, it's an exciting time. And I think that as you get older in this game, you know, you realize as you're able to drop something, I was saying to my fam earlier today, it's a blessing. You know, I got all the nieces, nephews, the kids around now, everyone's around that they're all trying to be like, whoa, 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 is this Pop Evil release day? They're all excited. I mean, I had a niece, she hit me up and I've never talked to her about music ever. She's like, you know how excited I am? You know how excited I am for the new Pop Evil? I'm like, why don't you tell me how? And she goes, one in a billion. And I'm like, a billion excited. I'm like, oh my gosh. You know, so it's just amazing how many kids are embracing and listening to these songs when the Pop Evil catalog with their family members, and that's a huge honor and something we definitely try to have a huge responsibility when writing these songs and again motivate. And again with Chaos Reign, I mean, it was funny writing these songs, both these songs. Obviously we had no idea there was going to be some kind of a virus going to take over, some pandemic. Yeah. But it's ironic sometimes when you write these songs, almost predict the future in a way, which is scary, you know. And now Let the Chaos Reign seems like you know, this song is that motivation to fight that invisible enemy, you know. So it's crazy how that's done. And then with work, you know, with work, man, it feels like all we do is work, that it's time to the whole song is about appreciating the little. It seemed like, I remember when I was writing the song, everybody I was talking to, I was always too busy. I'm like, nah, just text me. I'll get back to you. Just text me. And I'm like, all the people I know are stuck on my phone and I can feel it coming. I've been feeling it for days. Like, it was like, oh my gosh, it was like a reminder to myself that, like, if you don't take the time in this busy lifestyle, in this busy music business, that you can, you know, you can miss birthdays, you can miss loved ones, you can miss holidays. And it was important for me to remind me that, yes, all we do is work, but it's important to appreciate those little things. And now, of course, now I have who knows if it'll be a whole year off to enjoy and appreciate everyone. So I think it's a very, and we thought about that, you know, people were like, are you sure? Like, people aren't even working. And the song's not about going to work. The song is about appreciating those people while you're working to understand that, look, we have a life. And again, I'm trying to stay positive on this matter. Obviously we all want to go back to work. So all I want to do is go back to work. But for now, I'm going to appreciate and try to stay positive about it and appreciate the loved ones that are close and especially the fans, man. It's awesome. So do your comments, get on the YouTube, get on the Instagrams. I'm going to try to answer to as much as I can, more than I normally do. Normally it's the webmasters and everyone respond, but I'm going to try my best to not be lazy and not be too busy for everyone else. So I'm excited to embrace the new normal.
Well, I hope that, you know, since your songs are so prolific sometimes, that you wrote a song about maybe the Red Wings winning the Stanley Cup.
Well, I did last time, man. I tried it with Waking Lions, with the Detroit Lions. It didn't help. So, I mean, I don't know. I want to jinx the Red Wings this time, you know, but I'll take some tickets to Caesar. I'll take some tickets to the Caesars to go watch a couple games. That's for sure. But
yeah, no doubt. Remember, we did that one thing at Joe Louis Arena. Do you remember?
Yeah, we did. I think we did footsteps over there at the Pistons or something like that.
Yeah, that was a long time ago. I was just thinking about this. You guys did the acoustic thing up in between periods or something, I think.
Yeah, we did. That was crazy, man. It's just so many shows over the years. It's hard to remember them all.
Yeah, I know, no doubt. Yeah. Hey, JT, my boss, he says that he has a Pop Evil bowling ball. I didn't even know they existed.
JT broke the band, man. He was one of our very first believers, and he took a chance. JT was originally over in Grand Rapids and a good friend of mine. He actually played with the band. He's an amazing guitar player, so I got to have JT play back with the band one of these days. But took a long shot on Pop Evil about 14 years ago, and here we are. I get to do an interview with you now. So I love JT. I'm so glad he's back over there at the Riff, so I can't wait to get him over back on stage, maybe at least give him a big hug. So I've been missing him.
Yeah, no, he's great. He was telling me the other day about going on stage and playing with Jackal, too. And then your bass player, Matt Dorito, sends me a picture of him holding Jesse's chainsaw. It was the funniest story. So anyways, so what else you got to say to the fans before we cut you loose here? I mean, you got the new two songs. I mean, we talked a lot about the quarantine and everything that. I mean,
sure.
Keep positive, I guess, huh?
Look, I want them to stay positive. I know Michigan has been hit real hard, and don't worry, we're going to be back. Like I said, I just give you a little bit of homework, right, since we're quarantined. Learn these songs. Listen to them nonstop. All the plays on YouTube, on Spotify, on all these streaming measures, very, very, very helpful to the band. So the more the numbers go up, the more leverage we have as band members to get out there, get more shows, and bring more cool and fun stuff to you guys. So it's very important that if you don't have money, don't worry. You can still help by streaming. Obviously, you can go to the Riff and listen online. All that stuff is so important when you go to those platforms. Support your radio station, especially your local radio stations, because it's not just about streaming in the worldwide web. It's about local. It's about not just music at radio. It's about what's going on in your community, all right? So when you listen to these other streaming platforms, they don't always know about what's going on in Michigan. And I will tell you one thing and one thing for sure, Meltdown certainly does. Mm-hmm. So make sure you listen to them. When you want the more global aspect, you got the streaming. When you want that more what's going on at home, the Riff's always there for you. They've been with you for decades, so you know they're not going anywhere. We're also with you on all our streaming platforms. So again, your homework is listen to these songs nonstop and learn every word. So when we actually get to play these songs, and when you think, that's my biggest craziness thing to me, is when we actually play these songs, they could be hits. So they will be hits if you guys want them to be hits. We did our work for you. It's up to you. Do it for us. We cannot wait. We're so blessed. These comments I'm reading already are humbling. They're bringing me, they're getting me emotional. I don't even want to think about it. Because like I said, you're supposed to think I just woke up. So with that said, we'll be doing a lot more of these Instagram live. Whatever they call these things, they're new to me, but they're certainly cool, and it's a good way for me to see Meltdown. Meltdown, I hope your family, everyone's safe. Stay safe out there. I love you. I miss you. I don't even want to let you go, but got to do it.
Busy days for all
of us. So stay safe, y'all.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, you too. And by the way, how cool would this have been when we were kids if we could have watched our rock star heroes?
Are you kidding me? This would have been a dream come true for me. This is crazy. This is awesome.
All right, Lee. Well, listen, man.
I'll tell you what. I wasn't going to do it, but how about this? To end you, I wasn't going to do it, but everyone's been asking me for. I'm just going to do a little bit for you. Is that okay?
That's awesome.
Just a little bit.
Go for it.
Gone 155, and I don't know. I'm still alive, but you I can, but I don't get back anymore. Still believe in
let's rock, roll, and I pray the music gonna set my soul and till then. Now, it's just meant to be. Stay safe with pop people and meltdown. God bless y'all. Love you.
Love you, Michigan. Detroit.
Stay safe, y'all.
All right, Lee. Hey, thanks a lot, man.
Bye now.
See you, brother.
Yeah, bye, brother.
There you go. Two for the price of one on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown. Like I was saying earlier, just had this conversation with Scott Stapp that I didn't even know was coming. And he was great. Looks great. Doing the whole family thing. It sounds like everything's really going well. He actually kind of hinted about something that's coming up, but he couldn't really let the cat out of the bag just yet. So we'll replay that coming up on a future episode of Talkin' Rock with Meltdown. In the meantime, thank you guys so much for checking out. If you made it this far, five-star ratings on Apple and iTunes, reviews are always appreciated as well. We do appreciate you guys doing that. But of course, more importantly, thank you so much for listening to Talkin' Rock.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.